For decades, the Vietnam War has been a Hollywood obsession. Apocalypse Now, Platoon, Full Metal Jacket, First Blood, these were blockbuster films, embraced by audiences and critics alike. And for decades, they've helped us understand a painful war and understand each other. From Spotify and the Ringer Podcast Network, I'm Brian Raftery, and this is Do We Get to Win This Time? How Hollywood Made the Vietnam War. Listen on the Big Picture feed.
Reboot your credit card with Apple Card, the only credit card designed for iPhone. It gives you up to 3% daily cash back on every purchase. Plus, Apple Card has no fees, not even hidden ones. Apply for Apple Card now on the Wallet app on iPhone.
Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Variable APRs for Apple Card range from 19.24% to 29.49% based on creditworthiness. Rates as of February 1st, 2024. Terms and more at applecard.com.
This episode is brought to you by Lucasfilm and Disney Plus, presenting an all-new Star Wars series, The Acolyte. Stream the two-episode premiere June 4th and witness an investigation into a shocking crime spree where secrets will emerge and no one is safe from the truth. The Acolyte, two-episode premiere, streaming June 4th only on Disney Plus.
Hello, welcome back to the Prestige TV podcast feed. You asked for it. We're giving it to you. I'm Jonah Robinson. Joining me is Van Lathan. It is a complete Sopranos rewatch podcast. Just kidding. We're here to talk about the Hijack finale.
Oh, look at you. I love it. What a scamp. Joe, I love it when you bring your scampiness to the table.
Should we just hijack this podcast feed and make it and talk about the Sopranos for the next few months?
Tell Bill we're doing different shows and then we just talk about
really just the Sopranos.
White caps. Yeah.
Now we're here to talk about the Hijack season, maybe series finale. We'll discuss that at the end, whether or not they're gonna cue us up for a second season. So that is up through episode 7. Maybe you think you've watched, I guess a bunch of people thought it was only 6 episodes and they thought the big twist that happens in episode 6 was this big ending for the show. It's 7 episodes. Please make sure you've watched them all before you listen to this podcast, because we're going to talk about plot details from the finale of the first season of Hijack. If you've not watched it, go watch it. That's your last warning. Elsewhere on the feed, Juliette Littman and I just completed a 7 episodes of the show OC rewatch, like a mini rewatch of the beginning of season 1 of OC. Van, did you ever fuck with the OC?
California!
We come. Yep.
So here's the thing. I've never watched it.
But know that?
I know that because it was so, it got to a point of ubiquity.
Yeah.
And everybody was talking about it. It was 90210 for like a year or two.
Yeah, once. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right.
So you can listen to that. Mallory and I covered season 1 and 2 of Only Murders in the Building, and we're going to be covering the beginning of season 3 next week. Rob Mahoney and I are covering Justified City Primeval. And as I mentioned, Van and I are here to talk about The Sopranos. I mean, Hijack. You got your spoiler warning. What more could you want? Let's start by talking about episode 6, because this was like sort of the big moment that a lot of people were talking about. I got a text from you. I got a text from Bill. Everyone's like, holy shit. Episode 6, the big Amanda twist. How did that land with you?
I was shocked. Hijack really kept me on my toes.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it was different. It was a change of pace, right? Because I'm watching a lot of MCU fare, a lot of superhero fare, which, because I'm so familiar with the source material that stuff comes from,
yeah,
I kind of know how it's going to end.
Right.
A lot of the time.
Right.
You know, Hijack was an interesting departure for me. Non-IP based. I didn't know what was going to happen. And the show did something really smart, was to set up the stakes to where you could see any of the characters dying. You kind of know in a show like this who's going to survive and who's not going to survive. But really, I could have seen anyone getting it. So when that twist comes, I was legitimately surprised. I thought we knew everything that we needed to know about our hijackers here. And I thought we were dealing with these blokes for the rest of the show.
These chappies.
But no. And the way that the pilot was just domed. Boom. Shocking. So yeah, no, I was into it. I dug it.
That's what he gets for beating his co-pilot around the face at the beginning of the season, I suppose. Yeah, I will say, here's my attitude about Hijack. Now that we've seen the first season, or perhaps the only season. I had a fine time at the summer television, just watching this. I think if you try to look at this show too closely or think about it too seriously, a lot of the wheels come off the plane, as it were. Like, our colleague Ben Lindbergh has a really good article over on theringer.com. What a great website, about all of his like questions about the finale. Like, what happened here? What happened there? I'll talk about a couple of them. That's one way to watch Hijack. And I love Ben. That's how Ben's brain works. I was mostly just letting the silliness of it wash over me because there's a lot of moves that don't make any sense. But it's exciting. And as we discussed when we covered up through episode 5, just a great vehicle for Idris Elba to just dominate the screen and the show and our attention. You know what I mean? So I had a good time with it. I don't think it's that serious. And I really don't want a second season. I think that would be a terrible idea. How do you feel, Van?
Well, you're fucked, Joe. Because I think they're going to do another one. Okay? I think they're going to do another one. I think they got themselves surprised in terms of how much people were really into the show. And I think anytime that there's a surprise, that they're coming back.
It's okay. Well, here's the question. If let's say you're the god of television and you're deciding whether or not there's a second season of Hijack, are you doing another Hijack? Or are you doing another season with Idris Elba? Because I do not think you can do both. You cannot put Sam, who is not, let's be clear, like a hostage negotiator. He is a business negotiator. You can't put him in the middle of another Hijack. It will break the premise of the show because he's supposed to be like not a regular guy, but kind of a regular guy caught up in the situation, right? So do you do season 2 Hijack, this time on a train and a different person's involved? Or you do season 2 Hijack, it's Idris Elba, but it's another crazy scenario that has happened to this regular guy? What do you think?
You have to do some sort of revenge Hijack. This is like Taken 2. I'm okay. Serious.
Okay.
So in Taken 2, what happens? The Albanians want their get back. Now, Taken 2 sucked. Okay, but that's besides the point.
Is it besides the point?
It is. It's okay. Besides the point because we got to print money. You already know that Barbie 3 is greenlit.
Yeah.
I think they might make a sequel to Oppenheimer.
What happens in Oppenheimer 2?
I'm telling you, man. They could make a sequel to bring Oppie back. You know what I mean? So...
Two Oppenheimer.
I love that. But look, maybe the hijackers here try to get some get back on Sam and his family. Maybe they when they're all in whatever office they're gonna go to or whatever, there's an attack there, and then the building gets hijacked or something like that.
Oh, so we're doing a reverse Die Hard. We started on a plane. Now we're going to Nakatomi Plaza. That's what you're saying.
Now we're going to play something. They will come back with something else. Will it be good? No.
No.
You know what I mean? No, yeah. It's not going to be good. But what's going on here, baby? This is what we do. You know, and by the way, I'm against overanalyzing this first season of Hijack.
Right.
I'm standing a gap against it.
Well, I mean, like, that's how Ben enjoys things, and I love Ben, so I love that for him. I just think it's a losing proposition to try to dig too deeply on a show like this. I think you're either along for the ride or you're not, and I think you should enjoy it on the level that we enjoyed all those, like, sorry, it's weird to say enjoyed, but enjoyed all those hijacking movies that we watched in the 90s. Like, I'm not going to go deep on Con Air or Air Force One or anything like that. It's just sort of like you're in for the writer or not. There's a difference between having like a week between episodes to think about something like this. But George Kay and Jim Field Smith gave an interview to The Wrap. This is what they said about season two. There's definitely loose ends, but what we wanted was for Sam to go on this 7-hour journey. It would be interesting to see Sam Nelson again and see how he might take that lived experience and apply it elsewhere. Hopefully, some of that can live in the viewers' heads. But ultimately, we wanted this show to be satisfying and have a sense of closure at the end of it. We set out to make it as a limited series, and that's where we left it. But it's been amazing to see how everyone loves the show. And, you know, we'll see what happens from there.
We're back.
That's under a bullet point in my notes that says season two. No! Because, you know, you take something like The Flight Attendant, a show that I loved in the first season, because, again, it's like a regular person caught up in crazy antics, and then you try to put that person in an extreme situation again in the second season. Anyway, I liked Hijack. I don't want a second season. I think I've made my point. You are like, we're going to have it. It's not going to be good, but it's going to happen. Get over it sort of thing, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like, for me, I'm looking at it, it's inevitable. So why don't I go into it with the Jackie thinking the wacky can come back again? You know, this was a wacky show. This show had wackiness all over it, you know? Episode 6 particularly, I really enjoyed because of the wackiness of the young man in the house. He's making calls.
Kai.
He's a ninja. You know, they don't see him. They don't think to check every room of the house thoroughly.
Why would we check every cabinet? Why don't we just check some cabinets and then call it a day?
Yeah, they essentially hijacked this house. A lot of mini hijackings in this show, by the way. We think of the plane as being hijacked, but they hijacked a lot of stuff from a lot. See, Jovanna, this is what we do. Go deeper.
Yeah.
Okay. So a lot of people got their stuff hijacked here. but they didn't think about making sure that nobody else was in the house. They were like, hey, I went upstairs, I looked around, and it's over. Now, that would make sense if they were pressed for time. But these motherfuckers was chilling. You know what I'm saying? Like, if they had like 5 minutes where they have to go through there and get something out of there or download the files, get the knock list, that would be one thing. But they were in there for a long time. And if you're going to be in there that long, I would think, let's just make sure nobody else is in there. You know what I mean? But it made for great suspense.
I would think, and if they were just like random thugs, you're like, sure. But these are like, they come with their cleaner outfit on. They're ready to like have a kill room set up if they need to, and then clean it, like clear it all out and put it in their cleaning van and stuff like that. So these are highly professional assassins. In fact, so good at what they do that when the cops come to the door and are like, there was a suspicious call from this house, and they're like, and the most suspicious looking dude answers the door with the gun behind his back, and the cop's like, yeah, no worries, we're not going to investigate it. And here's where our beloved Ninja Kai, Sam's son, just wanders out of his hiding place before the cops have even walked in the door, and then gets himself apprehended by the assassins here.
Yeah. Not clutch by him. First of all, someone called 911 from the house, and the 911 operator was audibly concerned. We're going to send somebody. They had some kind of thing going back and forth. The people get out there, blah, how? And they just leave. You know what I mean? So to me, you know, but I say all this to say that...
Why have we never covered British television before? Why have I been deprived of your Chim Chim Charoo, Dick Van Dyke accent up until now? Incredible stuff. Love it.
It didn't take anything away from the fact that I was actually on edge. Yeah. I was on edge. I didn't think they were going to execute Kai in the show, but I was on edge about what was going to happen. Whatever a show has to do to deliver, to be good, to make you unsure of the twists and turns from one moment to the next, this show did it, and it wasn't hyper cerebral about it. You know, but it still got it done. It got the job done. I liked it.
I know that they tried to be really thoughtful about it based on the interviews that I've read. And I think one way they really succeeded, to go back to this Amanda twist, is they talked a lot about how they wanted to cast that role. Because something I complain a lot about, not complain a lot about, but because you and I watch a lot of film and television, there's this thing I like to talk about, which is the casting spoiler, where like someone shows up and you're like, they didn't put an actor that good or that, you know, well-known to me or whatever in a role that small. That has to be the murderer. That has to be this, that, or the other thing. You know what I mean? So they like, they put this actress, Holly Aird, who has done a lot of TV work, but is just like the right level of fame where you could put her in there. She has this conversation with Sam early on. Idris Elba, you know, talks to her sort of right after the hijacking starts. The first person he talks to is Amanda, so he can get the core biographical details that he needs. And then we just like watch her be anxious the whole flight. And we think she's anxious because of the hijacking, but she's anxious because she knows she has to like make this move eventually. And we're constantly checking. There's like various people that we recognize. We mentioned this last time, like the teens or like that lady with that business lady with the glasses who has no one to call if she's like going to die or like all this sort of stuff like that. So I do think that Amanda twist has done really well. Did not see it coming. Cast really well. No spoilers in the casting. And then she was great in the finale, I thought. You know what I mean? So it's not like they cast like someone who couldn't do what she needed to do in the finale, which is convince us of her panic and also her competence at the same time. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And take her from being somebody who murdered one of the principal characters in Cold Blood to somebody who we have to identify with and root for pretty quickly. Okay, they did that pretty well. I actually was past the point of waiting for a sleeper on the plane. I thought that there might be one earlier on. But in the penultimate episode, you don't think that you're going to get a plane sleeper at that point. I thought that maybe that's too late to introduce a sleeper, like a new plot thread. I feel like we have to pay off what we already got. So when that happened, I had subconsciously let go of the thought that there were any more accomplices on the plane, which is another reason why it got me. Now, I should have been thinking about the fact that something more had to happen to our pilot because he beat up a lady on TV.
He sure did.
And that's never going to bode well. And he never showed remorse, by the way. Like, he never showed remorse before for doing what he did. But yet and still, it made me super intrigued for the finale, which was good, but not quite as good as episode 6.
It's so hard I'm not going to say land the plane.
Hard. Do it, Joe.
It's so hard with these British like 6 to 8 episode stories. Oftentimes the last episode, you're kind of like, like it's sort of like ridiculous, but it has to wrap up, like all this sort of stuff like that. This felt like it moved quickly enough that that didn't bother me. Here's what I do want to talk about though. Van, what is the background photo or what is the lock screen photo on your cell phone right now? Not to get too personal about it.
It's Bozeman, my dog.
It's your dog.
Yeah.
And for me, it's like a really nice photo of the ocean that I took or whatever. How many people do you know have themselves as their background photo? Or more to the point, a photo of themselves with the exact details that you need in order to like get them to... Anyway, they hand back the cell phones in this like wildly weird way where we're just going to hand them out to random people and try to get them to the right person. Like, I didn't understand. The only reason to do that is so that Amanda's phone will land in someone else's hand. And also Sam's phone like goes to one of the teenagers or whatever. And they know it's their phone because of the lock screen. And we knew earlier the biographical detail about the hijacker who died because his mom was his lock screen. So I just want to ask, maybe in future, if you're getting on a flight, change your lock screen to something not as useful to hijackers. Do you know what I mean? Or vice versa.
Have I ever told you about Van's three rules of sociopath?
Oh, please tell me. And I'm going to see how many apply to me. Number one.
Picture of yourself in your lock screen.
Okay. Clear.
Don't like macaroni and cheese.
Clear.
Don't like dogs.
Mostly clear. Who?
If you have all three of those, you can't. One is cool, two is cool. If there is somebody listening to this right now that has a picture of themselves on their lock screen and doesn't like macaroni and cheese and doesn't like dogs, you're a sociopath. I know it. I already know it. This rule was made up. I keep having to put him on blast for my brother. Well, for my brother who has a picture of himself in the gym.
Your Vegas brother?
Has a picture of himself in the gym on his lock screen. A picture of himself deadlifting. I'm like, bro, you can't do that. You can't do that. That's such a red flag. It's a burnt flag. It's very bad. Look at Joe's face. She hates it.
Well, this is Van's brother, to be clear, who like loves Tolkien, and like we've talked about how
can't get a fig and leaf.
We should be best friends, but now that I know this, I'm not so sure. I have some cell phone questions. How about Dan, cop, our Detective Daniel, running to save the day with Kai, coming with this fake evacuation story, blah, 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 racing from the countryside to central London in time to save Kai. How did you feel about all that?
I mean, you know, there are various cultural reasons I didn't like it. But in terms of just the show itself, I thought it was, propaganda bullshit. But I thought it was a good way to tie their characters up. And the reason why is because it showed that even though there was animus between Kai and Dan, that they were at least paying attention to one another, that they hadn't shut each other out. Because when they have to do this little move where it's like, hey, I'm riding my bike and I'm doing all of this, they were going back.
The bike I took this morning. I do have questions about those assassins and their levels of intelligence. What do
you
think?
I have to be real with you. I'm letting some shots off. As soon as I hear, oh, you think I'm dumb?
Yeah.
Hold on. Yeah. I got the gun with the silencer. Yeah. I'm like, my G, you fucking with me?
Do you think I've never seen a movie?
That's all you're gonna hear. Pew, 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 pew. You think I'm stupid? Like, I hear you talking in code, you idiot. But they're none the wiser. And then he comes there. And also the way they were apprehended was very they're at the door. They got guns on. They don't let off a couple of shots at all. They just get overwhelmed by the police. Just not the highest level of assassin / heavy henchman guy being used.
They didn't send their best. They didn't send their best men, you know.
Reboot your credit card with Apple Card, the only credit card designed for iPhone. It gives you up to 3% daily cash back on every purchase. Plus, Apple Card has no fees, not even hidden ones. Apply for Apple Card now on the Wallet app on iPhone. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Variable APRs for Apple Card range from 19.24% to 29.49% based on creditworthiness. Rates as of February 1st, 2024. Terms and more at applecard.com.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com. This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit AnytimeFitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details.
How do you feel about our hijacking essentially being like a money play?
Well, I thought that was an interesting twist, the like stock market twist of it.
Stock market play, yeah.
Yeah, I hadn't seen that coming. And then the fact that then like the worst outcome for the plane is the best outcome for the hijackers. Because oftentimes with like a hijack and demands and all sorts of stuff like that, like landing the plane safely is part of the whole deal. And in this case, they don't really have a dog in the fight in terms of, they don't care about those people they sent up there to hijack. So they don't really have a dog in the fight in terms of landing that plane, and they can go ahead and fucking crash for all they care. I do have a question about the double cross with the masterminds out at the farm. Because mastermind number one, played by great theater actor Simon McBurney, is sitting there and he's like watching the stock price and he's like, little more, little more, little more, little more, right? Like, fuck the plane. I don't care as long as we're making money. And mastermind number two is like, we got to go. The helicopter's leaving. We got to go. Make the call. Make the call. She needs to know. She needs to know. She needs an answer. Kills mastermind number one, right? We're going to go ahead and just get rid of him. We're going to leave. Why does mastermind number two not call Amanda? Why does no one call Amanda? Right? When he's like, she needs to know, she needs to know. Ben put this thought in my head and I rewatched it and I couldn't get rid of it. Right? Like, do you know what I mean? He's like, she needs to know, she needs to know. And then they get in the car and drive away and no one calls Amanda. Why? Do you know?
I do know.
Okay. I'm sorry. I'm falling into the trap of thinking too deeply, but let me think a little more deeply about Sam's character arc, because this is something that the showrunners feel particularly proud of. And I'm curious if you agree with their assessment. So here's what they said. They said, in terms of Sam, when he gets on the plane versus when he gets off the plane, it was a case of working out his character in terms of who he was without the hijacking. He comes on the plane a very self-centered, self-assured, self-important character. He's very keen to solve things himself and doesn't rate anyone else's ability to do the same, which he does with charisma and with Idris Elba-ness, so we don't dislike him. We want to see him warm up and open up in terms of allowing other people's opinion in and views in. How do you feel like that tractor, like, do you feel like a different man gets off the plane than got on the plane?
Fuck no. Because okay, he's so resolute that it's hard to feel anything creep in. And it's played brilliantly by Idris Elba, right? With the intensity, but it's pretty one note. And I read the character as pretty one note. I don't think that it's bad that it's one note. I think the most dimension that you get to him is before all of this cracks off, to where he's trying to get back with his wife. He's buying her presents and he's getting on there and you're thinking, wow, this is a guy who's going to make one last shot at it, right? But the longer this goes, the more that's sort of out of the window. And the fact that he's trying to make that happen isn't very important anymore, because he's got a mission to accomplish. And it starts to become more of a situation to where it's like, almost like The Martian, like solve one problem, solve the next problem, solve the next problem, solve the next problem. You didn't get all the quips and the disco, but as far as his development to like have all of these people working with him, it seemed like they were working for him, because he was giving out orders more than working with him for the most part, even though, you know, other people had ideas and stuff. But as far as that type of development and evolution of the character, I really did not get that. Did you?
First of all, Hijack season 2 must include disco. I think we've all just agreed that right here, right now. know. I keep tracking him to John McClane, right? Because especially since like the stuff with Alice in the finale where she's like, you're on my call sheet, I'm going to land your plane. And like when Sam finally gets on the phone with her, it's a very like John McClane talking to Reginald Ville Johnson, like, you know, the cop who's helping him through the building sort of relationship between the two of them. So like this was Die Hard on a plane, which is just, you know, Die Hard 2. From beginning to end, like that's what we're doing here. And John McClane, when he shows up in Die Hard, you know, Marriage on the Rocks, really disconnected with his wife, like all the sort of stuff like that. And then by the end of the movie, like seemingly has affectionately reunited with his wife. But like John McClane, if you want to keep the franchise going, John McClane is a character who can't change all that much because you need him to just John McClane be once again embroiled in personal troubles at the beginning of every Die Hard movie so that can sort of run parallel to his experience. So I think if we did get a Hijack season two, I don't think we meet a Sam who's like totally fine with his wife's new boyfriend and like totally chill and relaxed and having a great relationship with all of them. You know what I mean? Like I think we meet a Sam who's still bumping up against. I think to your point with Taken, Liam Neeson's character is one that can't change either. You know what I mean? Like you need these iconoclasts. You need Vin Diesel and Fast and the Furious you need Dominic Toretto to always be Dominic Toretto kind of in stasis the whole time, because that's not really what franchise or action franchises are not really all that interested in character development, unless you can think of an example where I'm wrong. There's usually like, especially in these 90s movies that were, or 80s and 90s movies, there's usually like some sort of reconciliation with your family or something's like something nice, but like not something that I believe is going to last for a single character played by Nicolas Cage or anything like that, you know, especially
because,
when you're talking
because those guys have to be, they have to be single minded,
right? And also like adrenaline junkies, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, I don't know that I caught into a lot of the character arc discussion around Sam. I just had, yeah, it was just like if it was like watching a summer action movie over 7 hours on Apple TV Plus, and that's. Was fun. Fine time.
But a good one. A good one. One of those ones where you watch it and you go, you know what? That was kind of tits. You know what I mean? Like that kind of worked. You know what I mean? That was not a bad situation right there. You know? You think this was better than Secret Invasion?
Why would you put the bar all the way like down in the basement? For it to
I'm
clear.
Asking you, because like this kind of was like Secret Invasion. This was more, Hijack was more Secret Invasion than Secret Invasion.
That's true.
Scrolls on the plane.
Yeah.
International intrigue and espionage.
Yeah.
Nick Fury, basically, as Sam is Nick Fury. He's got all of these skills. It kind of was the Secret Invasion that we thought that we were going to get. It was Secret Invasion on a plane.
Way better than Secret Invasion. Absolutely. But way less baggage, you know what I mean? It could just be its own thing.
Way less baggage? I would argue that it had more baggage.
Oh. Is that the end of the podcast? Do we do it? Do we end with your baggage joke? No, well, here's a question I have for you. It's the question I'm constantly asking myself when we get like a 7-episode TV series that is so clearly in the model of films, the kind of films that we grew up with.
Uh-huh.
Is this better as a film? Or do you need all this time with all these passengers to sort of like get to know the teens and get to know, you know, the family with the doctors, the dad, and get to know XYZ, or could Idris Elba do this in 2 hours?
That's a fantastic question. Okay, let's think about this in a real way, not just like have Van Lathan Midnight Boy style flying from the seat of his pants.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Listen, this is the Prestige TV podcast feed.
Excuse me.
We demand, you know, ultimate
death. Yeah.
Van.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm trying to think of if you condense the film, what do you lose? And of the things that you, excuse me, if you condense the show to a film, what do you lose? And of the things you lose, do you lose anything that you need? You're going to get less Kai stuff. You're probably not going to get as much of the stuff at the beginning, which, to be honest with you, I'm talking about like the buildup, like where you go and you see the air traffic controller from Dubai get murdered and all of that stuff. You probably don't have time for that. You get maybe a little bit less exposition with Daniel, the cop. You don't need to see him go on a wild goose chase for the guy. Maybe just one scene of that. And you get significantly less of the machinations of the secretary and all of those
people. The government. Yeah.
Back on the ground. Like, if you think about a movie like Con Air or Die Hard, they take you there once in the first act, once in the second act, and once in the third act. And then the third act is always to say, bomb the place. Or, I don't care, send in SWAT. You know what I mean? They send, you know what I mean? They send you back there one time. So you get significantly less of them. You probably could do it, but I think as a movie, it's probably a lot more predictable because it's got to lean into some of these tropes a little harder. A slower burn works better for it. So it probably works better as a show. You could do it as a movie, but it probably works a lot better as a show. This is one of the only times with a format like this that I think this actually worked better the more of it we got. You know, I wasn't very checked out over the course of the 7 episodes for this.
I think the Amanda thing, you certainly don't get the thrill of that. Because that's the joy of television, especially week-to-week television, which is something we talk about a lot on this feed, whether something should be a binge drop or not. And so for Amanda, who we don't know who she is at all when episode 6 closes, and so we have a week between episode 6 and 7 to wonder who the fuck Amanda is. What did we learn about her in episode 1? Sam already talked to her. And if you rewound to episode 1, this is something the showrunners were very gleeful about in all their interviews, you can see her sneak through security behind the bag with the guns in the beginning of episode 1, if you look for it. So you miss that kind of week to week, what's going to happen sort of vibe. As with most things, though, I always want them to tighten up a little bit. And I would say this is a 5 episode show, not a 7 episode show.
So not necessarily a movie, but you could have done it in less time. You could have got it down to a 5. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, you know, shave off some of the on the ground stuff and keep it taut and tight in the air. Sounds good
keep
to me.
Keep it what?
Taut.
Oh, okay.
Not what I said. Not what I said.
Gosh, just, not I don't know. Joe, what I'm just saying. Joe, what just I said. Joe, I'm like, whoa.
Okay, let's say we do hijack season 2. Big Driss is not available. Right? He's doing Luther season 5 or whatever it is. Yeah, can't do it. Who do you cast in Hijack season 2?
So we're going new character. We're not going back to Sam again, right?
We're not dealing with Sam. New character.
Englishman, I'm assuming.
Yeah. Or English woman.
You know what? I like that. So let's go English lady. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think. I'm pulling a character from Game of Thrones. I'm pulling someone from Game of Thrones to play this. Lady from Game of Thrones. I'm going with the lady from Highgarden. No. Lyanna Headley. Cersei Lannister.
Lyanna Headley. Same page.
Cersei 100%. Lannister. I'm going Cersei Lannister. Because I like her when she's powerful. See, you know, but like she was powerful even in 300 when they didn't let the women do anything. So like I like her when she's
Did you ever powerful. See, did you ever see Dredd, the Carl Urban Judge Dredd movie? She's great.
Very
in that
good,
too.
By the way.
Yeah. She's great in that. I'm with you. As soon as you did Game of Thrones, I was like, oh, Lena Headey. Yeah. 100%.
Because I was thinking at first, you know who I like? I haven't been able to see her in as much stuff. Remember what's her face? She was killed when Cersei blew up the Red Keep.
Natalie Dormer. Natalie Dormer, who played Marjorie Tyrell.
Marjorie Tyrell. I don't see her in enough stuff. I loved her in that show. She was so great. I was thinking about her, but then when I thought about what you need, Cersei. And Cersei didn't blow up the Red Keep. She blew up like the little, where they were having the court. I mean, she blew it up with the green stuff. What was it? She blew it up. What
Why, with should absence. We do? Should we, fuck a Sopranos rewatch? Should we do a Game of Thrones rewatch pod? Dan and
Wait, what do you call it again? The stuff?
Wildfire.
Yeah, and they had it underneath all the town, and then the kid was running. Kid was running down there, and it was like, oh my god! And they followed the kid.
Yeah,
did that kid die? By the way, the kid that led him down.
Oh, the
there?
Little bird. I don't think the bird died. No, I don't think so.
Yeah. And then it's everywhere. And then boom, it blows up and she kills everybody. So funny she couldn't get out.
This has been a reenactment of the Game of Thrones episode, The Winds of Winter, as told to you by Dan Lehman.
You know what's the crazy thing? So I'll say this. It's like, I get so caught up into these shows, but it's always difficult for me to remember the names of the characters, particularly in Game of Thrones. In Game of Thrones, I probably know 5 or 6 character names, like literally. And I've watched so much Game of Thrones stuff. I know the names of characters that like aren't in the show, like Sir Arthur Dayne, the Knight of the Morning Star, whatever the fuck his name was.
Sword of the Morning,
The Sword of the Morning. So I know, but like when I think about the actual names of a lot of the characters, the ones that weren't like around, like what's Ramsay's dad's name? I know he's Lord Bolton, but what's his name?
Roos. I feel like this is a quiz. Roos Bolton. I feel like you're quizzing me. Yeah.
I know that you know. I know you know. Okay. I don't get me wrong. What was the name of the most disappointing character? And I know this is a tangent, guys, but this is the most disappointing character in Game of Thrones history. To me, in the history of the show. And it was the lady that was a lady of the night that...
Roz.
That he fell in love with. No. The one that turned...
Oh, Shay.
Whew, that hurt.
And this has been Game of Thrones Corner with Van and Joanna. And if you want a Game of Thrones rewatch with Van, I actually think it would be delightful. Let me ask you one more Game of Thrones question. Devin, who's our producer of this podcast, like, what am I here for? It's all staying in, Devin, by the way. When we compare your inability to name a Game of Thrones character, let's put it up against Chris Ryan. Chris Ryan cannot tell the difference between dragons. Can you tell the difference between different dragons on the show?
Only in the new show.
Yeah. But you can
only
tell
in House of the Dragon. Yeah. Because those dragons are a lot different looking. And to Chris's point, I think that they learned that they had to make the dragons look different. Because in the new show, I can tell the difference between the dragons. One dragon fucking huge, and then the other dragon smaller, look kind of cool. But in the old one, hell no. It was dragon. Dragon number one, dragon number two, dragon number three, until he got hit with the ice beam. And then he turned into a bad dragon for the Night King. Remember that when that happened?
You know what upsetting. I do. To go back to Natalie Dormer, who is not going to star in Hijack Season 2, but Marjorie Tyrell herself, she was on Petty Dreadful... : City of Angels. That's sort of like one of the last big things that she did. I didn't watch that, even though I liked the original Penny Dreadful, but that's what Natalie Dormer's been up to. But Lena Headey, stay by the phone. We'll be calling you for Hijack Season 2. And are we putting it on a plane again, or are we on a train? What are we doing? Are we in a building? We're in Nakatomi Plaza?
What could we hijack, though? Think about it, though. You got to really think about it.
The like, channel.
What could we hijack?
The channel.
That could work. The channel could
the Eurostar. Yeah.
What if you hijack that big Ferris wheel that they have in London?
Oh, the Eye?
Is that what that's called?
Yeah, the Eye. Well, here's my question. Are we hopping in between compartments? Like, is there a hijacker in every compartment?
Everyone has to get on there with somebody they don't know, and then that person is the hijacker. They've hijacked that.
Well, the th- The thing about the eye in London is those individual compartments are not just like two people. It's like a whole like little room. So you could put a hijacker in every pod if you wanted to, you know?
Okay, but then you're not going to be able to like, it's not the same.
You're going to have to like walkie. Like that was,
yeah, it's not, it doesn't work. But we need to think about something they can, because they're not, they can't do another plane. It's like too much. And also.
But guess what? They might. They might.
You know, you could take it back to Dubai. Plenty of things to hijack there. Hijack Burj Khalifa.
The Burj Khalifa. Okay. This is great. Lena Headey. And we're hijacking the Burj Khalifa. Someone has to pull a Ethan Hunt and climb up the outside of it at one point. And you know what?
Yeah. Here's the thing, though. Here, I got to say one more thing. We can't write it. We can't even cast her because nothing's going on. Okay.
Oh. So, yeah. We are with the strikers, absolutely. But when all of that is settled, call us. You know where to find us. Anything else you want to say about the actual show we're supposed to be talking about, man?
I'll say this. I think the show was sneakily important.
How so?
Because there is a mini rebellion, small one, against the IP drowning that we've been subjected to, the IP waterboarding.
This is the thrill of Barbenheimer, right? Even though Barbie is obviously an IP property, it's at least like a new installment in an IP property, you know?
I don't consider it as much one just because it is leaping out of the box to the screen, and we'll have all kinds of cartoons and movies. I mean, there have been a bunch of Barbie movies, but nothing like this before. It's a new experience, is what I would say. And Hijack was a show that I just started to watch, mostly because of Kalika, that used the fact that we were unfamiliar with it to push the story forward. They could do anything they wanted, right? And I feel like that's happening in reverse with a lot of what's happening with what's out there, that they're using the fact that we're so familiar with it to cut corners and cover up vital story points and make us really watch stuff that's not very good. And so I do think that in a way, Hijack is a cool little experiment in the fact that you can still just put a story on the screen with competent actors. It might not reinvent the wheel, but it still rolls pretty good, you know?
And this is what a lot of Apple TV programming is, and especially some of their most successful efforts, or at least successful with like the people that we watch television with. So like Silo is based on a book series, but like, you know, is plenty new to a lot of people, a brand new world. Severance, a very original property.
Love Severance.
Yep. You know, stuff like that. So I think that is something that's really on Apple's mind, is to try to give us these like new worlds that aren't as reliant on existing IP. We love IP because this is a lot of what we do over on Ringerverse, but I do love a refreshing break from IP. And this has been a fun little like foray over into, you know, a nostalgic of 90s action cinema TV show, a great vehicle for Idris Elba to show that he can like just charm his way into any given cockpit. You know what I mean? Like, that's just something that he can do. Give me that face.
Whoa.
Don't give me that face, man.
Joe.
Man, you said that when we last talked about Idris Elba, and you gave all your like sort of caveats about Idris and how you're connected to him and stuff like that. If you guys want to go listen to those on the last podcast, you can. But if you're going to call up Idris Elba right now, what is the like big role? You said he's missing like the big role, the big defining, like, it, you know, could have been something else, but few things that he's done have not launched off the ground. So like, what is the role that you are pitching for him? What does he need to do?
It's such a great question. Obviously, there's that one role that people thought that he might play and it didn't happen. And that's a career maker for anyone. But I think the role that really that he really needs is a role not where we watch him, but where he takes us with him somewhere. And that is kind of the thing that actors do. And when I say actors, I mean all actors. I'm not actors and actresses here. I'm saying that actors do, thespians. We need to go somewhere with him. He needs to take us somewhere rather than us just watch him in various different situations. And there is a difference. And those roles are few and far between. I mean, you can do them even in these big movies. Like, that happens in Barbie. I mean, that happens in Barbie. In Barbie, we get taken somewhere with Margot Robbie and with Ryan Gosling. So I think he's missing a film like that. It doesn't necessarily have to be this gigantic IP thingamabob or even James Bond or anything like that. But we need to go for the ride with Idris Elba rather than just watch him on it at this point.
I would say another possibility, and I don't want to put a cap on Idris Elba ever because I just adore him and think he's great, but like, I wonder if he is meant to be the biggest thing on television rather than a medium-sized thing in films. Do you know what I mean? Because he is Stringer Bell and he is Luther, you know what I mean? And he is Sam here. So like, maybe it's these like iconic TV roles rather than a big film role that's going to be his enduring legacy, perhaps.
Could be.
Anything else you want to talk about before we go?
No, I want to tell people that just don't complain about what Mattel is about to do. Just don't even complain about it. It's over. Okay? Like, a lot of people are complaining, oh, we don't want Polly Pockets. We don't want He-Man and Masters. Shut up. It's all coming out. I went to the movies to see Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Tuesday night. Everybody in the theater had pink on. I think that the movie will make $50 million this weekend, maybe more in the third weekend. Like, I'm just letting you shut up. They're making them all. Everything's being made. Every Pixie Sticks, Candyland, like all of those movies, Monopoly, whatever. All of those movies are coming out. This shit's gonna make $1.5 billion, maybe $2 billion. I don't know, bro. So just shut up, all you purists out there. Shut your faces. It's coming out.
Mallory and I did a thing on the Ringerverse on House of R last week where we like pitched a movie based on a toy, like what we would make. My pitch was Chatty Cathy was made by the same person who made Barbie, a Chatty Cathy movie made by Sarah Polley. Do you have a pitch for any of the Mattel properties, like Apples to Apples or Barney? Or you'd be surprised what Mattel owns.
So here's the thing about Barney. I could do a fucking amazing Barney movie if they let me go dark.
Wasn't that Death to Smoochie? Isn't Death to Smoochie already exists?
Basically, if you let me go dark, let me look at what Mattel has. They got American Girl. I could do a American Girl movie about the Black American girl that was enslaved.
Yeah, please listen to the Ringerverse toy and explosion draft for more information on that.
Right. I could do something like that. But like, they got a lot of stuff here.
A Minecraft movie?
Ooh, that would be crazy.
Yeah. Sounds great. Let's just bring on the toy era. But in the meantime, Van, where can people hear more of your thoughts and takes and opinions?
Ringerverse. Go there.
Higher learning.
Pew, pew. Higher learning. It's Rachel Lindsay. We're about to tape that right after this. I would say a He-Man movie with Chris Hemsworth, but he kind of already playing that character right now, isn't he? Mm-hmm. Wouldn't let him do it. So Ringerverse, we're trudging on. Higher learning. It's always fun to pod with my pal Joe.
The Giovanna Experience will roll on into the future. And someday, like, let's say if we enter a content drought because the studios are being stubborn and refusing to listen to the very reasonable requests from the SAG and WGA, then maybe Van and I do a Sopranos rewatch podcast. Maybe that's what we're saving it all for. Maybe that's our moment to shine. We'll see. I'm very willing. I'm very excited to do it. We're going to do it eventually, someday. That's it for us on this episode that was nominally about Hijack, but was also just about a bunch of other things. Thanks so much to Devin Mancy for producing this podcast. We'll be back in the feed, as I said, with a whole bunch of stuff. Only Murders in the Building. Winning Time is coming. A whole bunch of stuff coming in August. And we'll see you then. Bye.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.